Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes. Shout out to each of you for tuning in. You are now talking with TD. I know normally we talk a lot of X's and O's. We talk shop. This week, I want to change it up because there's obviously a lot going on in the world, in this country specifically. So I want to get into that. We got Jim Trotter of NFL Media Group joining us. We have Derek Morgan, former Tennessee Titan. He's got a lot of things going on, so we're going to get into that. And Elijah and I, we're going to have a conversation. I think it's really necessary. I want to hit on the fact that football reflects life, and I want to hit on, you know, some of the things that I've experienced. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But before we do that, I want to shout out some of the guys who are speaking up, you know, whether it be Ryan Tannehill, Carson Wentz, Zach Ertz, Coach Stockstill of MTSU. I mean, you have so many coaches speaking out. Trevor Lawrence, you have, you know, Coach Vrabel spoke out, and we're actually going to bring you his full comment later on in the show as well. But I want to recognize the fact that it's a lot different this go round, and I think that does show progress. Just when you look at in the past, it was almost like it was taboo to speak out against these type of things. It was more of, you know, hey, it doesn't affect me, so I'm just going to keep my head down and keep focusing on my craft and my little world. It's awesome that these guys are speaking out. But really, after speaking out, the next thing that has to happen is progress. We have to figure out a way to keep this momentum going and move that into change. Because let's face it, the fact of the matter is there is need for change. You know, there's systemic oppression, there's racism, a lot of this goes on, and a lot of people don't necessarily get impacted by it directly. But the fact of the matter is a lot of these people who aren't impacted by it directly are indirectly impacted by it because they have friends that are, right? And I tell you one thing, if you and I, Elijah, walk down the street and you got hit by a car, it would be wrong for me to just stand there and not do anything about it. And I think that's what's happening now. And that's why it's so remarkable that these guys have, you know, raised their voice and said their piece, because it's absolutely necessary.
And they're the ones with a lot of power too.
Right.
I mean, your common, you know, NFL fan listens when Tom Brady speaks. They listen when the Carson Wentzes speak, the guys who make the big money in the NFL. They listen as much as an owner would. You know, if an NFL owner comes out and, you know, speaks out against systemic racism, it might not mean as much to a casual fan or someone who doesn't affect, like a white casual fan, like if Tom Brady says it. Mm-hmm. You know, or like a Peyton Manning or guys who are the biggest stars in the league that aren't affected by it too. And that's the one thing that's different than 2016 that makes this, that at least makes me feel positive that change is going to happen, that the attitudes towards race in the NFL is going to be a lot different. It's hard for, you know, guys like Colin Kaepernick to do what they did and almost feel like they're on an island because a lot of their white, you know, teammates and players and confidants kind of don't step up in this way to make them not feel alone, or to kind of push, you know, push the agenda forward.
I think it's important that you recognize the fact that people of influence
mm-hmm.
are speaking up and needed to speak up, because you'll hear, well, it's Carson Wentz. Who cares? Why do people care what athletes say? I want you to say that same thing to Nike or Wheaties, Adidas, mm-hmm. any company. I want you to say the same thing to them and say, well, why do people care what Carson Wentz wears? Why do people care mm-hmm. what type of yogurt Dak Prescott eats. It's because they are people of influence. So that's an awesome message and thing to recognize. So that's what we're going to do here for this show. We're going to just have open conversation, and I think that's absolutely necessary. Definitely, I know a lot of you tuned in for X and O talk and for Titans talk, and we'll have some of that for you, but I want you to stay tuned to this edition because it's real talk, and I want you to listen to some of the things that we say, that our guests say, and even some of the quotes that we pull up that I've selected to go on the show. So we're going to go to a break. Before we do, please search us out. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review, please, and thank you. We'll be right back. Yes, UNITY, man. It's that simple, right? That's what we need to establish, some form of unity, because if we could do that, then a lot of these issues that are here within our country, within our planet, they'll be eliminated. So one of the things I wanted to do, like I said, we're going to just have some real talk, and this is an opportunity just to look at some of the things that we have going on. And I tell you, when I saw what happened to George Floyd, when I looked at what happened to Breonna Taylor, when you see what happened to Ahmaud Arbery, I think what we're seeing is just, especially in Aubrey's case and Floyd's case, where these guys were, it's just strange to me. The way that it happened. You know, I'm not saying what happened to Breonna Taylor was right. I'm not in any way saying that. I'm not saying it was any less brutal than the other two instances as far as Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd are concerned. But, you know, just the act of actually following a man down the street and shooting him like he's a deer or something is it's just mind-boggling to me. The act of putting your knee on the back of someone's neck to the point where they can no longer breathe, even after they scream for their mother, it's just unfathomable to me. So when you see these things happen, it does bring about rage. It brings about, it just stirs up a lot of different emotions. And I think when you see this happen over and over and over again, it causes rage, you know. But my thing is, okay, how do we handle this rage? And I think that's important. But how do we keep it from getting to a situation where we have this rage, where we have this rage within someone to do something like what they did? You know, how do we get to the point where, you know, the carelessness of what happened with Breonna Taylor, how do we get to the point where that carelessness is avoided? Mm-hmm. And I think really that's the key. And for me, just as someone who has grown up within football, you know, been in a lot of huddles, been on different teams, one of the things that I always loved, and I'm going to ask Derek Morgan about this too, it's just I always love how we all have a common goal. And no matter what, you know, whether someone's bigger than me or looks different than me or is uglier than me or more handsome than me, whatever it could be, you know, infuse some comedy to this, whatever the differences are, we all overcome them because what we want to do is put the ball in the end zone. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think, you know, Queen Latifah saying unity, I think that's the end zone for us. Mm-hmm. And I just it puzzles me that we cannot have that same approach that teams have in the huddle. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't get that, but I think that's what the beauty of sports is. And this is actually why Emory Hunt, Brandon Howard, Chris James, Gene Clemens, and I, Football Game Plan, we came together and we did a book called What Did Football Teach Me? And Football, a Love Story. And this was one of the things that continued to come up. But I tell you, we talked to over 100 influencers in the game, whether it's ladies football, NFL, college football, what have you. There was one quote that I think just drives the point home. And I thought of it this morning because it really is this simple. Ronnie Lott, when he talked about the huddle in this quote, I want you to listen to what he's saying and just kind of pull that in and understand why this is something that we need to think about as we go through everyday life.
Well, the game of football has taught me so many things, man. Now, think about the huddle we have right now, right? I tell people this all the time. There's a reason why they call it a huddle. You know, people have been huddling all their lives, trying to find ways to enhance each other's lives. The great teams do that all the time. The great teams do that. The better the huddle, the better the team. And so it's simple, man, how if you huddle for all the right reasons, we wouldn't have Ferguson. We wouldn't have some of the challenges that we have in our society. But as we all know, there's always a moment where somebody doesn't belong in the huddle. And yet we have to continue to move on. We got to continue to play. So the game of life, man, is always surrounded, starting with the huddle. And for me, I'm lucky enough to know that, you know, by the graces of God, man, it's been a nice huddle. It's been a nice huddle. And if I just keep making sure that he's in front of me, I'm going to be all right.
It's that simple, man. Every time, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that, but every time I get goosebumps. And you look at what Brian Arakpo said. You look at what Michael Griffin said. You look at what a lot of people that have played sports have said. Why can't we have the mindset that we have in the locker room?
It's a good question. And a big thing for me, too, is when you're on a team with somebody, you hold somebody accountable.
Yes.
And when you allude to the hunting down of someone like Ahmaud Arbery, because he was hunted down and it was caught on tape. The death of George Floyd, he was deliberately murdered and caught on tape. If we're all on the same team, we all need to hold our teammates, our human being teammates, accountable for the things they've done wrong so we can approach our metaphorical, you know, ball into the end zone. Because if we don't, we're going to be protesting and doing the same things that we've done as society for centuries. You know, this is nothing new. That's the crazy thing about that. Where everything we're talking about right now is nothing new.
It really
is. At all.
And it's crazy because I saw Spike Lee on TV the other day. And, you know, I said, you know what? I want to go back and watch Do the Right Thing again. I remember going to see Do the Right Thing in the Green Acres Mall before I lived in the Philadelphia area, before I moved to Philly and then on to Coatesville. I lived in New York. Queens, New York. And I, at that time, you know, Do the Right Thing came out. And I remember just the added security. I remember, you know, because people knew that that movie was going to pierce. It was a piercing movie. It was a movie. They knew that it was a movie that, you know, was going to stir emotions. But this is 1989.
Wow.
Radio Raheem was one of the characters. And he went into a pizza shop, Sal's Pizza Shop, you know, Sal's Famous Pizza. And there was a confrontation. The police came and they choked Raheem out. Then they, once his feet stopped moving, because they had him by the nightstick and lifted him up. Mm. Once his feet stopped moving, they just dropped him and his body smacked the ground, eyes open. And just that level of disrespect for life. 1989, so 31 years later.
Yeah.
It's still happening. The level of disrespect for life. This officer after the life left George Floyd, he still had his
it wasn't enough
neck
for him.
On his knee.
And
or knee on his neck, excuse me.
Yeah. It still wasn't enough. And he had that smirk on his face. Steven Jackson said it best. He had that smirk on his face that told the person recording on their phone that he's going to get away with it, that he has backup.
Yeah.
And the whole part of being on the same team as a society and as a human race is to hold those people accountable. If officers are willing to be held accountable for doing something as deliberate like that, then maybe it doesn't happen as much. Maybe we're not going through what we're going through right now if accountability is held and there's a precedent for accountability is held. Because what are a lot of the other names that we can mention of black men and women who have been killed?
And here's the thing. Mm-hmm. It's happened to white people too.
Yeah.
I will acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. It's happened. But the fact that it has happened to anyone needs to stop. But we have to understand and look at it's more likely to happen to people that look like me.
Disproportionately.
Right.
They're minorities for a reason because they're statistical minorities. And the fact that it happens so frequently should tell you statistically something is very, 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 very wrong and biased.
Exactly. But the one thing one of the many things I like about this time, you have actual police chiefs saying, you know what? What they did was wrong. Mm-hmm. The actual police chief of that same police department,
mm-hmm.
he can't come out and directly say it was wrong, but he let you know that it was, I forget the word, compliance, something, I forget mm-hmm. the exact word, but he said their silence was, in essence, compliance.
Yep.
I think that says it all.
It feels different. That feels a lot different.
And the thing is, with this situation, because I was on another show, and we talked about how you have to, how can you address this? And I think the first thing that has to be done is listening, you know, because for someone, because a lot of my friends who aren't minorities have reached out to me, and I tell you, look, you got to listen first, you know, mm-hmm. because you can't really understand what it is that I'm upset about unless you understand what I've gone through. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, just last week I was on the phone with my younger brother, and we were talking, and he was like, man, you remember back when we were little? Because we used to do all kinds of stuff, but this was one of the times we used to have sparkler fights. So we have sparklers and just kind of throw them at each other, and we're just being kids.
Mm-hmm.
I was 8 years old. My brother was 6. My older brother was 10. He threw a sparkler, and I guess someone said that we were, you know, I don't know what they said, but for some reason police came. And they took my 10-year-old brother, they grabbed him and threw him in the car.
Wow.
10 years old.
Over sparkler fights.
So then you wonder why we're upset. This mm-hmm. is why. You know, in other instances and in places that I've lived, you know, there were times where, you know, I didn't always live in a place where it was really, really good to live, you know. And, mm-hmm. and I have friends who have said, you know, police have tried. I still remember the officer's name, in fact. It was a particular officer. He used to try to plant drugs on you and case you up. You know, you can't understand why we're upset unless you understand and see these things that we've gone through. I can't tell you how many times playing basketball at the court late night, and then walking back home. I remember I used to have to walk over this bridge. It was called the High Bridge. I used to have to walk over the bridge to get to where I lived. And so many times, hey, man, what are you doing? Why are you out? I'm just minding my business mm-hmm. trying to walk back home,
mm-hmm.
right? And these are just minor things compared to what, you know, a lot of people have gone through that look like me.
Mm-hmm.
But this is why we're rageful. You know, this is why we're angry. But I think the big thing that we have to figure out is how can we channel this anger, this rage into changing this situation, not just for us, but more importantly for our children. Mm-hmm. We have to figure out how to make the world a better place.
And that is the million-dollar question, is how do we? And a lot of that is understanding. And I know for me, being a 25-year-old white male, I don't have any experiences that you've had. I can't speak for a lot of things that you have, or other African-Americans or minorities, people of color, who have really bad experiences with the police. But what I can use is take your anecdotal stories, mm-hmm. and apply them to like mine. I've been pulled over a ton of times in my car. I love to speed. I've been pulled over a ton. When I was in high school, I've gotten to some things I probably shouldn't have gotten into. I've been pulled over with things in the car that should not have been in that car. And not once in any of those did I ever fear that that was going to be the end of my life. And the George Floyd example was, he was even having the interaction with the police because he was accused of having a counterfeit bill. What I did was, I've done things where I've actually broken laws and have had to talk to police about actually breaking laws, not something I'm accused of doing, but something I got caught red-handed doing, and I did not have a finger put on me. And I know almost every single person that went to high school with, that I was friends with, or even in the small town that I'm from, which is like 99% white, have all had similar experiences where they would never, even if getting caught red-handed breaking a law, mm-hmm. have to worry about having a knee on their neck and suffocating right there in broad daylight.
It's crazy you mentioned being pulled over, because I know there were times where I really thought about, okay, in car shopping and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know what? I don't know that I should get this car because it is very nice. Do I want to subject myself to possibly being pulled over just mm-hmm. for having a nice vehicle? And here's the thing, right? You run my tags. The name says Teron. It's very clear what I look like.
Yeah.
You know, or even just, I remember my 21-year-old daughter, when she was about to get her license. In Pennsylvania, when you get your license, you're 16. And I remember sitting her down and telling her, okay, listen, if you get pulled over, you need to make sure that, A, you cooperate. Mm-hmm. You listen to what the officer is saying. And in doing that, you can't make any sudden movements. Make sure your hands are always visible. Oh, and you need to keep your license at a place where it doesn't look suspicious if you're reaching to. Why do I have to have a conversation with my 16? Why do I have to tell my younger daughters, hey, listen, if we get pulled over, I need you to make sure that you always have your hands visible. I need you to be relaxed. Why?
And that conversation probably took a while to have to explain. You know what my dad's conversation with me was when I got my license? Don't be a jack, you know what.
Which, hey, the message is definitely, it's clear, but that don't be that.
There was never anything about if you do, that's your life.
Yeah.
There was never that type of like sternness, like if you don't do this, you know, the same mistake is going to happen to you that a lot of other people have happened. That was just never a thought process. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people like myself have had that experience or lack thereof, so they don't have that understanding. There's a lot of that hearing and not listening or understanding that's what you guys go through is so much different than what I go through or will ever go through. And there's a base understanding of that. And once you can understand that, and then you can apply it to other situations, you can call out injustices, or you can call out things and hold our human teammates mm-hmm. accountable.
But conversely, I will say this. There are some police officers that a big influence in my high school life was an officer by the name of Billy Thornton. You know, he was my wide receiver coach too. So he always, you know, was a voice of reason. And I know that in all communities, there are officers who actually have that type of impact. And that is something that we need to celebrate. And that further pushes what I believe is, I think it's absolutely necessary that people from within the communities that they serve and protect, those should, like the officers, there should be officers within that. And I think, you know, if you are from the community that you're serving and protecting, you're going to serve and protect it, right? 9 times out of 10, you're going to serve and protect that with just the utmost integrity. Like, you're going to just do it right. So I think that's a part of what we could have. But as you said, holding each other accountable, that's major. And that's what we're seeing. So I definitely appreciate the fact that you are seeing people stand up. Fellow officers, stand up. Fellow officers, take a knee. Fellow officers, march. Fellow officers are recognizing and acknowledging that it's wrong. And I think that's a major start.
Mm-hmm. And that's a huge thing because, like we said before, there have been protests about this type of brutality for centuries. And in America, decades, you know. But I think this is the first time that I can remember seeing that, or there being this much, you know, at least as much unity as I have seen in my lifetime, which has only been a span of 25 years. But that's the first step in order to understand, is to be able to walk with someone, try to walk in their shoes.
Yeah.
And then maybe from there is when real and adequate change can finally happen.
So these are the type of conversations that need to be had. I'm glad we were able to have this conversation. As I mentioned in the intro, it's not going to be all Titans talk today, but I appreciate each of you for tuning in. I hope the message is, you know, reigning into your conscious, so to speak. And we're going to go to a break. I want to come back. We're going to bring in Jim Trotter from NFL Media because I know he has a lot to add to this conversation. So we'll be right back.
Yes, the rhythm's a rebel. Without applause, I'm lowering my level.
All right, as you hear, Rebel Without a Cause, that's that OG music. It's only right I play that because I'm bringing on one of my OGs, Jim Trotter of NFL Media. You always get a kick out of when I call you that, but hey, man, it's respect and you already know. How's it going?
Man, I'm just trying to get through it like everybody else. I think you need to drop the G. Just say,
oh. Oh, no.
That's about how I'm feeling these days.
Hey, man, oldie but goodie then. We'll put it to you that way then.
I appreciate you, man.
So, obviously, as you mentioned, there's a lot going on. I wanted to kind of jump right into that. And what you're seeing now that's different is guys like Ryan Tannehill, Andy Dalton, Carson Wentz. These guys, they're not directly affected by what's going on, but they're speaking out. Can you kind of speak to the significance of seeing this, and have you ever seen anything like this before?
Yeah, I think it's very significant. You know, you can add to that list guys like Derek Carr, Tom Brady even retweeting a player coalition statement about what's going on. This is a dramatic departure from 4 years ago when Colin Kaepernick first took a knee to protest against police brutality against people of color. And at that time, as you know, white players in general, and specifically quarterbacks, were almost silent publicly. That's not to say that they didn't support the cause behind the scenes, but publicly, you didn't hear them speak out. And now we are hearing them. And we are hearing owners use terms like systemic racism or institutional racism and trying to identify the root of the problem. So to me, those are tremendous gains. And, you know, I even reached out to Derek Carr to say, you know, why now? Why speak up now when you didn't 4 years ago? And basically he said, you know, he had always been taught that, you know, as an athlete, when there's something controversial and it's so polarizing, you put your head down and you just plow forward and you stay out of the politics. And he said now, after seeing what's gone on in particular the last couple of years, it's just been so heavy on his heart that he felt it was important to use his platform to try and make positive change. And he said it doesn't matter now if people want to project that there's politics involved or if they're upset about it. He doesn't care. So to me, that's a significant step because, look, let's be honest. There are certain doors as black men that we can't crack, we can't open, or it takes an extremely long time to open. And the people behind those doors often are more willing and receptive to white players, prominent white players, prominent white quarterbacks, than they are to prominent black players. And so for me, there are some who don't think it's significant. I do think it's significant from that standpoint.
And one of the things on your timeline, you retweeted Jed York, the owner, well, his father's the owner, John York, but he's still involved with ownership of the 49ers, and they donated $1 million to help the cause. And this is something that the Ravens owner, Steve Bisciotti, through his foundation, they did that also just to fight systematic oppression. When you see something like that, what do you think of when you see the owners not only using the term, but actually putting their money where their mouth is?
You know, what's interesting is that I hear people, when I tweeted that out, there were some people who came back at me about, yeah, what a hypocrite, they blackballed Cap. And it's funny, people don't always do their homework. The 49ers organization actually stood behind Colin when he took a knee and supported him publicly. Not only supported him publicly, but back in 2016, donated $1 million to local groups who were fighting for racial equality and to end social injustice. So this was not something new for the 49ers or the York family. Again, they had done it back in 2016. And, you know, in talking to Jed about this, he just felt that you've got to go one step further now and that you've got to identify the root problem. You can't just keep talking about, oh, we're against racial inequality or we don't believe in social injustice. He said you need to go to the core of the problem, and that's why he specifically used the term, about systemic discrimination against black men, women, and children, and other minority groups. And to me, that's a big first step, because if you can't identify the problem, if you can't agree on the problem, then how do you expect to make any progress?
Exactly. And we're talking to Jim Trotter of NFL Media. And when you look at the Players Coalition, and just to actually put another name of a quarterback that has worked alongside these guys, Josh McCown, and what he did going to Capitol Hill with Malcolm Jenkins and with Anquan Boldin and Torrey Smith, I think that needs to be mentioned. But when you look at the Players Coalition and their role, what kind of role do they play in all of this, just as far as bringing awareness and raising ways to fight this cause?
Look, from the very beginning, I was on Capitol Hill when those players went, and that was at a time where, you know, the movement in terms of action really hadn't got going yet. But Anquan Boldin, whose cousin was murdered by an off-duty police officer, he felt the need to not wait. And so he put together a group that went to Capitol Hill, and I was there. And the one thing they wanted to do was to fight for not only police reform, but to improve police relations and to make change in these minority communities that are being impacted by police brutality. And so for me, that was huge, because what he did is he showed that, look, we don't have to be passive in this, and we don't have to wait. We can go out and try and make change ourselves. And Josh McCown was the only white player that went with him at that time. There were I believe, 5-6 players. Josh McCown was the only white. Later, as this process went on in the coalition forum, we saw Chris Long be vocal in terms of supporting his teammate Malcolm Jenkins. And so I went back to both of them last week and said, when we now see so many white players stepping up and speaking out after you essentially were on an island 4 years ago, how do you feel? And they both said they believe that that's a sign of progress, but, you know, they said, look, we didn't do it to be patted on the back. And actually, at times, it made us a little uncomfortable, because some people tried to make it appear that they were co-opting the message and trying to speak as to what's best for black people, when really all they were trying to do was support their black teammates and do what they felt was right. So the coalition has had a tremendous impact, even though people don't know it, because so many of the things that they're doing don't grab big headlines. And I'll give you a couple of for instances. You know, down in Michigan, they were able to get the law changed to where now minors cannot be charged as adults. Hmm. So that's huge. They were also able in Louisiana and Florida to get laws changed to where now former convicted felons after 5 years, and when they're out after 5 years, now have their voting rights restored. They were able to get things done, like in Massachusetts, where they got, I think it's $1.4 billion infused to public education systems, particularly in disadvantaged communities. And in Louisiana, they were able to help get a law passed now where you need a unanimous verdict to convict someone on a felony charge. In the past, it didn't have to be unanimous. And we're talking about, as you know, if it's a felony conviction, that's going to stay with you for life. So these things that they're doing are things that are making impacts in communities of color. So for me, I applaud them for it.
No doubt about it. And I'm glad you brought a light to some of the things that they're doing, because a lot of people don't know. Now, obviously, I kind of laugh about it because it is funny to me, you know, when I see Vic Fangio's comments, and I have nothing against Vic Fangio. You know, I think he's an awesome coach. I think, you know, when I covered the 49ers, he was a leader of men as far as the defense is concerned. But to say that he doesn't think that there's racism in the NFL is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like putting the blinders on.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is I reached out to someone after I saw that headline yesterday in the Broncos organization, and they actually sent me a transcript of that entire press conference. And in that press conference, Vic spoke out against, you know, social injustice,
yes,
and racial discrimination,
yes,
and all those sorts of things. And I think what he was referring to, if I can try and get in his head, and I'm not trying to make excuses for him, I think he was talking about on the field, there is a meritocracy, that, you know, you are judged on your ability and not anything else. The problem is when you make that statement in today's climate with the NFL, it rings hollow because, as we know, of the 32 teams, there are only 4 coaches of color. Of the 32 teams, there are only 2 black general managers. If you look at the league office, there are 12, if you include the COO, there are 12 executive vice presidents. Only 2 of them are people of color. You know, if you look at the 32 teams, there has never been a black club president. There has never been a black majority owner. When you look in the newsroom at the media group, the 2 men who are charged with making the final decisions on the on coverage of a league that's 70% black are 2 white men. And that's not to say in any way they're not empathetic or willing to reach out and try and understand what's going on. But I'm just saying, when you're talking about racial equality and those sorts of things, the NFL has work to do, no question about it.
Jim Trotter of NFL Media is our guest now on Talking with TD. You kind of led me right where I wanted to go as far as the Rooney Rule. I mean, that's obviously been in place, but again, we still don't have the diversity in head coaches as well as GMs and upper level management. With this idea of incentivizing hiring minority owners and GMs, obviously that didn't pass, but what are your thoughts in regards to that idea? Is that something that, you know, can be counterproductive? I mean, do you support that? Where are you as far as that idea is concerned?
Well, first, let's lay the foundation here. People are conflating some things. The Rooney Rule is something that isn't instituted by the owners. That's something that is implemented and instituted by the league office.
Right.
And it does not require a vote of the owners. So what they did this year is they said, we're going to expand the Rooney Rule now to where you must interview a minimum of 2 minority candidates for GM or head coaching positions. And they also said that we're going to apply the Rooney Rule to coordinator positions, which is huge. On the flip side, then, there were 2 resolutions that were being voted on by the owners. And one of them had to do with stopping teams from being able to block assistant coaches to interview for coordinator positions, mm-hmm, which was huge. And I don't think it got enough play, because what do we know about owners? One of the things they like in head coaching is if you've had coordinator experience. Well, now this will provide an opportunity for more minorities to get in that pipeline to become coordinators. The thing that you're talking about, the incentivization of hiring minorities as head coaches or GMs, what they were trying to say is that if you hire a person of color for GM or head coaching position, then your draft position in the 3rd round would be improved by 6 spots for a head coach and 10 spots for a GM. And how that came about is, honestly, the league office is frustrated. It does not like, you know, the look, the optics of the lack of diversity among head coaches and GMs. It wants to change that. It believes that it's good business to have inclusion and diversity. And so it is trying to do whatever it can to push that forward. It has had summits in the offseason with minority coaches. It has internship programs, all of these things, none of which at this point are working. So it decided to try something new in presenting this proposal. The problem is, as I talked to minority coaches and personnel people, 2 things they said to me. Number 1, it's a bad look for the league because it looks like the only way that we can be hired is if you bribe the owners to hire us.
Right.
And then number two, it undercuts our authority if we are hired. We have a scarlet letter on our chest that says we were only hired because of the color of our skin and not because of our abilities and our qualifications. And they worried that that would affect their authority within the building. Now, what's interesting, and that's how I felt, but what's interesting is I've since talked to a couple of former minority head coaches in the NFL who have said to me, Jim, look, it doesn't matter what it looks like, what it smells like, whatever. We just got to get our foot in the door, show them that we can succeed, and then try and bring others along. So we just need to hold our nose and hope that it passes. And, of course, it was tabled.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that these type of things have to be brought up. But when I look at a coach that, you know, a lot of people praise Brett Favre, a lot of people praise Andy Reid and Mike Holmgren, and, you know, I think it's very overlooked what Sherman Lewis did for that Packers team. And to think a guy like that never got a head coaching opportunity, it is frustrating. But in your opinion, where do we go from here?
Man, I wish I had that answer. I don't. I just think if we're talking about what's going on in the country and what we're seeing, I think the first thing you have to do is everyone has to be able to be willing to listen.
Yes.
Everyone has to be able to learn and educate themselves. And then three, I think people have to be intentional about their actions. It's not enough to say that what's going on is wrong. You have to be able to say it is wrong and here is what I'm going to do to combat it. And number one for me, that's at the ballot box. You know, the unfortunate thing is I hear so many people say, for instance, in the last presidential election, well, I didn't vote because I didn't like either candidate and they weren't going to do anything for me. And the problem with that is there are other things on that ballot that apply to you and your community that can make a tremendous difference. You know, whether or not we're talking about the hiring of a district attorney, whatever it is, judges. So I think people have to be active and educate themselves when it comes to voting. And then you have to hold those people that you vote for, you have to hold them accountable as you go forward. As it relates to the NFL, I think this, number one, and Tony Dungy said something very, very profound to me last summer when I was working on a story about the lack of diversity among head coaches, and he said, owners simply don't know how to hire coaches. And he said the NFL needs to have a class to train them how to hire them. Because what happens every hiring cycle, the first thing we hear is, who are the hot candidates, which is mistake number one. What owners should be asking themselves first and foremost is, what am I looking for in a head coach? Do I want someone with experience or no experience? Do I want someone older, someone younger? Someone from offense, defense, or special teams? Do I want someone who's a delegator, or do I want someone who's hands-on? Do I want someone more charismatic, someone more understated? All of these types of questions should be answered before you ever ask, who should we be looking at to coach our team? Because here's what we know. Whatever they are doing now, it is not working. Since 2000, on average, we have had 7 head coaching changes per year. So we're talking about 32 teams. That's nearly a quarter of the league changing its head coaches on average every year since 2000. And the message there is the owners do a damn good job of firing, but don't do a good job at hiring.
See, this is exactly why I wanted to bring you on, because I knew that you would bring clear, precise explanation and just understanding. And I appreciate that. And one thing before I let you go, I want to tell you that I appreciate how you have set the example for me and a lot of us coming up, Cam Wolf, you know, everybody. We look to you and see how you set the example. And you do your thing well, man, and you're someone that I look up to in this industry.
I'm going to tell you this in all honesty. When I hear from guys like you, young guys, who hopefully I can help, and you say things like that, it means more to me than anything I have accomplished in this business in 30-plus years. So I appreciate that, and don't think for a moment that I take it for granted.
Thank you. So I will definitely have to do this again at some point during the season.
All right. I look forward to it. Just call anytime.
Likewise. That's right. That's right. Big Daddy Kane. I get the job done. It's only right I play that because this next guy that I'm bringing on got the job done right here in Nashville for 8 years. He's still getting the job done because he's one of those guys that's accomplishing a lot in his post-playing career. Derek Morgan, former Titans outside linebacker, defensive end. Derek, what's going on, man?
What's up, man? Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. How's everything going with you in retirement life? I mean, it's got to be interesting. I know it's a change from always being on the schedule and just having everything go that way. How is everything going for you?
I love it, man. It's been a lot of freedom, but at the same time, it's been busy. So you mentioned being on a schedule every day, and you know, to me, I think that's actually served me well in terms of maintaining the certain disciplines and work habits and work ethic more so off the field. So it translates well, man, to kind of having that regimented routine and schedule mindset. And so it's been good, man. Been really busy, just, you know, busy trying to make a positive impact, man, out here. But it's been fun.
No doubt about it. And that's something we talked throughout the time, the year that we spent together here, you know, you playing and me writing, we talked about some of the different ways that you've impacted the community. What do you have going on now as far as that's impactful within the community?
Yeah, man, so it's a couple things. You know, I think when we first hit it off, we found out we were from the same hometown, man,
yeah,
back in Pennsylvania, which is a small world. But, you know, as being from Coatesville, Pennsylvania, it's one of those towns that's kind of been forgotten about, you know, old steel town. The economy came and went with it, and, you know, it's kind of left over, and it's not a lot of opportunity. And so, you know, I've been doing things throughout my years in the league back in, you know, kind of, you know, on the philanthropic note, you know, donating and working with some charities. But like I told you, felt like that really wasn't moving the needle. And so really went back about almost a year ago, talking with city officials, city council members and whatnot, trying to figure out a way to invest back into the city. And so found out through that process that Coatesville was an opportunity zone. And that's a whole nother conversation. But what it basically is a vehicle to get private capital in underserved and overlooked markets. So we've been busy putting together a plan for a sports complex and a food hall back in my hometown. And here in Nashville, we're doing some work with the housing authority trying to get a mixed income development. It's been a lot of work, man.
Yeah, and that's some a mid in like that what you're working on here in Nashville. In both cases, it's much needed. I know it's funny because I know firsthand both of those things are needed. Obviously, being in Coatesville and then moving here and trying to find a decent place to live, it was not the easiest thing to do. So props for that.
Yeah.
I want to shout you out on another thing that actually not what you're doing, but what your wife has done as far as being a plant-based chef. My 14-year-old daughter, she decided to give up meat, and she became a fan of your wife's IG page.
Yeah, she's a artist in that kitchen, man. She's especially during the quarantine, you know, she's been creating a lot of recipes in the kitchen. I've been in the best spot, you know, at the head of the dinner table. But she's been doing her thing, man, and has been very creative during this time just as an outlet, you know what I mean? And so she's actually helping a lot of people, whether she knows it or not. You know, we get people reaching out all the time, mm-hmm, saying, hey, look, you know, I was very inspired by your guys' journey and what you all are doing. So we just feel really inspired when we hear stories like that, man, especially her just to kind of keep going down the path and what she's been on. So I'm glad to hear that about your daughter.
Yeah, for sure. And Derek Morgan's our guest here on Talking with TD. I'm sure that you're in a situation now where you are enjoying the family life. You're enjoying not having to go through the grind of playing ball anymore, but what is it that you miss most about when you were in locker room? Like, what do you miss the most about the game?
I'm going to tell you this. I don't miss being told what to do every minute of the day. I don't miss that. I don't miss coming into the facility not knowing what your schedule is. What I do miss are the guys. You yep. know, I talked to Rack about an hour the other day just to catch up and talk to Casey, Woodger, Daquan, a couple of guys. And it was good. It was really good camaraderie. But you do miss that camaraderie to a certain extent.
Yeah, and I knew. Go ahead.
But nah, but that's really like you don't miss waking up in pain, bro. You know what I mean? That's something that you don't miss. But it's more so like if you have a plan, man, and you have a idea of what you want to do off the field, having that freedom and having that, you know, the resources to make things happen. It's a great spot to be, man. One of the things that I noticed throughout my league, you know, time in the league, a lot of guys really didn't look forward to retirement because it was the unknown. And while that is a lot of that is true, you know, if you set yourself up for off the field, you know, living your life off the field, you can do a lot, man. You know, I'm only 31 years old, so I got a you know, hopefully a large trajectory in front of me. Where I can do a lot of, you know, influential things, but it's been one of those things where I've been happy with the time that I have, and it's been a fun experience.
I knew you were going to say that you missed the camaraderie because that's something that it just seems like at any level that you play sports, especially football, that's what you miss when you stop playing. And that being said, having been a guy who played at Coatesville, played at Georgia Tech, and then played here with the Titans, it was always diverse. Can you kind of speak to how that relationship in the locker room and just being able to have that unity there should translate to actual everyday life?
I missed the last part of what you said in terms of translating.
I said as far as that translating to how it should be in everyday life.
Oh, just the uniqueness of that, you know, that bond and camaraderie in the locker room.
Yeah, and just how when you're in that locker room, despite differences, whether it be economic,
right.
anything, you guys have there's a common goal, and we all work towards that goal.
Yeah, exactly. It's a unique environment because, like you said, you have guys from all different walks of life and socioeconomic backgrounds and race. And so it's one of those things where, you know, I've had white teammates, black teammates, you know, through my time playing. But it's really about, like you said, being focused, hyper-focused on a goal. You start the differences start to dissolve. And you're not really as focused on the differences because you know that everybody's united with a common goal. Now, what you see in our society is a lot of picking sides, right? It's like, do you watch Fox News or CNN? And do you wear a mask? Do you not wear a mask? And it's all these different dividers that our society faces. And it's very binary. But, you know, it's not as simple as that. It's more nuanced. And so I think that the locker room, it represents what society could look like in a healthy way in terms of interacting with people who don't look like you, don't come from the same backgrounds as you. But it's one of those things where, you know, even going back to the protest, man, like with Kaepernick and what he did, you know, we were able to talk about it in the locker room in that setting because it was more so like, look, I know that you're going to lay it out in the field for me, so why can't I have an honest, transparent conversation with you? And so we had those types of conversations, even with the Trump presidency and all the different racial, you know, dividers that currently persist. And you got to think, man, we're in the South. You know what I mean? So it's not as progressive in a lot of ways as it is in other parts of the country. You know, we're from up north. You know, I spent the last 10 years in the South, but coming to Georgia Tech in Atlanta, I realized the stark differences along racial lines. And so that's one of the things that I was kind of, you know, had to get more of an understanding of. But it's real. You know, it's still real. Racism is still real. It's very prevalent, depending on where you are in the country, but it's still a real thing. And so that's one of the things where in the locker room, we're able to transcend a lot of those differences and racial barriers.
We have former Titans defender Derek Morgan here on 102.5 The Game. In talking to you and hearing you kind of elaborate on some of these things that are happening, I think of the James Baldwin quote where he says to be a conscious Negro in this country is almost to be in a constant state of rage. And obviously, you're very, your conscience is awake. You have an understanding of things. But for you, how have you been able to manage that rage or even like manifest that into positive things?
It is frustrating, man. You know, when you see people getting shot in the street, suffocated, it causes a knee-jerk reaction of anger. And then you pile on top of being cooped up in the house for 3 months with a quarantine, and you get this outlash of anger and protest and frustration. So it's a lot of emotions that have been boiling under the surface, and that's kind of what you see manifesting right now. But people need an outlet. You know, people want to know what they can do, and everybody's role is going to look different. I appreciate my white friends reaching out to me and asking, like, what can they do? It at least tells me that they care. And everybody's response to the injustice is going to look different. Just because you're not posting stuff on social media or you're not out in the streets actually protesting doesn't mean that you don't have a role. And so I think that for me personally, my whole journey, you know, to where I'm at now manifested from, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when I started to kind of broaden my outlook on the bigger picture that is bigger than football, is bigger than sport. There's a lot of people out here hurting, and that I've been given a platform to be a voice for some of those people who don't have a voice. And so I started asking myself hard questions like, what can I do to be a part of the solution? I'm not going to keep complaining. I'm going to try to get to work. And so when I started to really focus on the economical injustices in America, that's enough work for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I felt my role, you know, was in doing things that are more proactive in nature to find ways to create economic equality. And so for me, it's one of those things where I got to be very intentional with what I want to do, knowing that my role and my purpose in all this is going to look different from your role or somebody else's role. But I think that if you care about it, if you spend enough time with it and you're intentional, you'll find exactly what you're supposed to do. And so for me, I have a peace and I have a motivation because I know that I'm supposed to be doing what I'm doing and I'm purposed in it and I'm a part of the solution. And so it's one of those things where I was more so focused on the action of what I could do.
That's awesome perspective, and I appreciate you sharing that. Before I let you go, I want to just get a little bit into the Titans. And obviously, you know, Jarrell Casey, he was traded. And, man, that's came as a surprise to everyone. But what did you yep. think when you saw that news?
It's just the nature of the business, man.
Yeah.
And my guy Casey is through and through a Titan. You know, told me and my teammates that he was going to retire a Titan and has been loyal, you know, has been a great prototypical professional. But it's a business at the end of the day. You know, people got to make a living. People got to make decisions for an entire organization. So when I seen that, it was like, dang, you know, that's Case. That's he's a Titan through and through. But on the flip side of that, it's like, look, it's still a business. So as much as you can claim team loyalty and whatnot, it still boils down to the economics. It still boils down to, you know, what the higher ups have to make a decision for that's better, that has the rest of the team in mind. So it's just one of those things that's unfortunate because you want to see a guy play his whole career out, especially like Jarrell Casey. But it's just that's just the dynamic of the NFL. And so I think he'll have a great, year in Denver and however many years he stays there because he's a great player. So I know the type of drive he has. I know the type of work ethic he has. And he'll be fine, man. But it's just that's just the nature of the business, man.
Do you still watch the Titans or watch football in general, or have you just kind of detached on it in your focus on your higher cause?
I've never been a guy to watch a lot of football. It's almost like it felt like work a lot of the time because you watch tape all day, you practice, and you leave work, and then you turn on football. It just felt like you had no escape. So for me, I was in the habit of really not watching a lot of football, and I kind of continued that because it was a new, like, feeling. But towards the end of the year when the Titans started making their run, I did start to tune in, because I was happy for the guys and, you know, how successful they were. So towards the end of the year in the playoff, you know, run, I guess I jumped on the bandwagon and started watching the games and was more involved in it. But I didn't spend a lot of time in it. Like I told you, I was real busy, and I think that helped me with the transition.
Yeah, later in the year, I saw Rakpo, Michael Griffin, a couple of the guys came back, Lindell White. You know, you started to see those guys at the games, Chris Johnson. So it was pretty dope for me to be able to connect with some of the guys who were there before I got there, outside of a Rakpo. So that's pretty cool, man. Well, Derek, listen, I appreciate you. Definitely, you know, appreciate you joining, but also just what you're doing, man. And it's something, it's an example of what a lot of us need to be doing. So, you know, you're setting the tone, man, and that's the way it's supposed to be done.
My man, I appreciate you reaching out, man, and, you know, kudos to you being from the Ville and doing what you're doing, man. You're also inspiration for, you know, communities like where in which we come from. So I appreciate you giving me the mic for a few minutes.
No doubt. My God, man. Take care.
All right. Take it easy.
All right.
So what you saying?
All right, just to wrap this up, I want to bring you a couple quotes that really stood out to me. As I said in the intro, Mike Vrabel jumped on the Zoom conference that we had. It wasn't expected, and it was a pleasant surprise. And he was very honest in some of the things that he had to say. So I want to bring you in full what his comments were. Take a listen to this, because it's definitely it's real.
As always, wish you guys well, and hope everybody's safe. I hope everybody's, you know, working through a very difficult time in our society. And with that, I would just like to share a few things. You know, after the past couple of days of personal reflection and some really great conversations with our owner, Miss Amy, and our general manager, John Robinson, most especially our football team. You know, there's just some things I would like to say. First, to acknowledge my own personal privilege, one that's real. I'd like to acknowledge a social blind spot that either I was unaware of or chose not to see. I've had the unbelievable opportunity to listen to our players the last 2 days in our team meetings. You know, listen to them with an open mind and hear and learn what they believe in and how they feel. Amy, John, and myself have tried to put great people and great fathers and great husbands and great student athletes onto our football team. And the majority of those men are African American, with a much different experience and background than I'll ever know. And by listening and understanding those thoughts and feelings and how they feel has helped me recognize, I think, what's important. And what's important is that we find ways to respect each other's feelings, that we respect each other's beliefs, that we respect each other's efforts to make positive change in our community where we work, in the communities where we live, and the communities where we grew up. Being a only child of a basketball coach, playing for the Ohio State Buckeyes, Pittsburgh Steelers, the New England Patriots, and the Kansas City Chiefs, afforded me a great luxury of seeing how successful locker rooms are built and managed. They're built and managed on fair competition, love, loyalty, accountability, teamwork. What they're not built on is race, creed, color, or money. I would say that in closing, leaders are prepared. Leaders take decisive action and inspire a group of people towards a common goal. That common goal is inclusion, diversity, equality, opportunity. And so on behalf of the Tennessee Titans, our owner, our general manager, the head football coach, our staff. You know, we want to support and we'll continue to help lead our players as we work towards that common goal. Guys, I can't thank you enough for the way you cover us. Appreciate it.
So that was Mike Vrabel just sharing his thoughts on how we can make this world a better place. One of the things that stood out to me in talking to Jim Haslett, the new inside linebackers coach, a guy who actually, as he mentioned, had a lot of input in Vrabel being drafted by the Steelers. He said that he likes the way coach has just been able to talk to his players. He likes the way that it's not just football talk. And I asked him specifically because obviously, you know, we got Coach Haslett, a guy who has coached for a long time, and we got younger guys like Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown. Like, that locker room, that linebacker group is young. So I asked him, with it being such a different demographic, how are you managing to connect with them? And one of the things that he said was talking about the issues at hand. New DB coach Anthony Midget, he said that that's something that they talked about. So it's very clear that it's not just football. The conversations that we had in the earlier segment, Elijah, these are conversations that are going on these Zoom meetings, and it's not just football. And I think that's what kind of, I think it's going to galvanize not only this team, but any other team that's having those conversations. And just to kind of further drive that point home, Rashawn Evans, he was on the Darren Donegan and Chase show, and he actually commended Coach Vrabel. Let's hear what he said, just and how it's helped. And Evans, by the way, is a guy who we've said on this show will be one of the leaders on the team. Here's an example of how he's kind of seeing what Coach Vrabel is doing in this case.
You know, I had a very good conversation with my coach. Our coach, Coach Vrabel, came and talked to us individually, each and every group, which, you know, I feel like I've developed even more respect for him to be able to come back and talk to us about topics like this. We didn't even talk about football. We talked simply on what was going on in the world. And I feel like that's how you start. You go and have conversation about these things, not only amongst your peers, but you have conversations about this with your kids so that the younger generation can understand that what's wrong and what's right and be able to act on it. I feel like this is now for a lot of the people who are of age and are able to make moves and be able to do things. This is an opportunity for us to turn this thing back around so that the younger generation doesn't have to keep doing this over and over again.
That's an awesome point. It is time to work to make this better, not only for ourselves, more importantly for the younger generation. And Rashawn is 100% right. So, end of the day, these are conversations we need to have. We need to have the conversation with the thought of listening to understand, not listening to respond. That's why social media can be toxic, right? But if we actually have a real conversation, I think from there, we could develop ways to overcome this. As my guy Stephon Marbury says, love is love, man. And I think, you know, the fact that we're all on the same team, we're all teammates with a common goal, which is unity and success, whatever way of success, however way we look at success. But that's what we're looking for. So, again, I appreciate each of you for tuning in. Wanted to make sure that we had real talk, just about real life. We will be back to football and talk that. There are some things that are going on, but I think there just was a bigger cause to address today. So I'm glad we're able to do that. Elijah, I appreciate you. And again, thank you to each of you for tuning in. God bless and good night.